Michael Ball, Kensington, Maryland. I'll discuss how to reduce bus operating costs in the wake of a new budget hole. First off, reorganize the routes that articulated buses run. For example, Route 70 and 71 have reduced traffic due to Route 79. Q2 won't need any articulated service once the route is restructured. 40-footers already in service can replace articulates by discontinuing the little-used J5. Altogether, WMATA can buy fewer 40-foot buses in fiscal year 2011 while retiring old buses normally, saving money. As for choosing new buses, I like WMATA's new flyers. That said, recently I found a CNG-powered hybrid bus called the Design Line EcoSaver 4. Apparently, its hybrid system offers better fuel efficiency than other buses, so that's something to look at. Speaking of CNG, I remind you about the merits of CNG buses, and not just at the new Southern Avenue garage. All bus purchases, including as many stimulus-funded buses as possible, should use CNG. CNG prices are near record lows, and it's also an excellent tool to hedge against the effects of Congress's cap and trade plan and reduced oil imports from Mexico. Any costs to update the pumping infrastructure to support natural gas buses will be made back later, placing less strain on WMATA's operating budget. Pay now or perpetually pay later. The choice is yours. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ball. That would conclude our public comment period unless there is. Do you have materials for us? Okay, just 1 second. Let me wipe my hand. I wasn't expecting to be receiving documents. Okay. Okay. All right. That's good. Thank you very much, Mr. Ball. We'll have these copied for the members of the board, and we appreciate your attendance today. We have before us the approval of the agenda. Let me add, there are two items. We have a Virginia RAC appointment, which we will, without objection, add to the report of the chairman. We have also, from our executive session, we have a contractual matter involving tax-advantaged lease rail car substitution, which we will add as administrative item number 11, unless there is objection. Okay, those two items are added to the agenda. Are there further changes in the agenda, further changes? Is there a motion to approve the agenda? As amended, Mr. Zimmerman has moved. Is there a second? Seconded by Mrs. Hedges. Ms. Hewlett, I'm sorry, Ms. Hewlett. Okay, Ms. Hewlett, thank you very much, Ms. Hewlett. Discussion, hearing none. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, no. The ayes have it. And the agenda is approved. We have before us the September 24, 2009 board meeting minutes. Is there a motion to approve as if read?
So moved.
It's been moved by Mr. Benjamin. Is there a second? Seconded by Hutchins. I'm sorry, Mrs. Hutchins. I'm sorry. Is there discussion? Discussion. Hearing none. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, no. The ayes have it. Here we are. Now I'm complete. Okay. The minutes are approved. We have our report. Diana Zinkel, are you here? Chairperson Zinkel from the Writers Advisory Council. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman Graham and members of the board. I am pleased to present you with the Writers Advisory Council report for October 2009. At our meeting earlier this month, we had presentations from WMATA staff on bus stop design and information, and as well as a presentation on safety and security. We were very interested to hear discussion of both the guidelines for regional bus stop design that WMATA is developing on behalf of all member jurisdictions, as well as the enhanced information that WMATA is planning to provide at all of its bus stops. Council members had several comments and suggestions for both the bus stop design guidelines and the information standards that Metro is detailing or developing internally, and some of these comments are, and these comments are summarized in my written report. We were also very happy to have Deputy Chief Lee with us. That was a very useful overview of much of what the Metropolitan Transit Police Department, or the Metro Transit Police Department, does, and we were very interested to learn about some of the casual closed programs where officers ride the bus dressed as ordinary citizens, as well as some of the new juvenile enforcement programs the authority is working to develop. We did, our members did have some concerns about, you know, distinguishing between sort of relatively innocent, although sometimes disruptive, juvenile behavior and more serious behavior leading to potentially explosive situations, which Metro has experienced in the past. And we do encourage Metro to continue to work with both the school systems as well as community police efforts to make sure that Metro is a safe environment for everyone, is also a welcoming environment for both juveniles and adults. We also did get a sense of some of the cost issues involved in the MTPD's efforts, and so that was also very interesting, particularly in light of the budget discussion that we are now all engaged in. Riders Advisory Council members were very pleased to see that WMATA is taking the step of trying to get some early public input into the budget, and we hope that the two town halls that were held earlier this week, as well as the ones scheduled for Maryland next month, anticipate continued opportunities for public input and public discussion. I was very pleased to be invited to participate in the DC panel, and I was very pleased to see that our Virginia members were invited to participate in last night's panel in Virginia. I think much of the public input, while it moved in some ways away from the budget, was also very good to hear. Now, moving on to other issues of public input, at our September RAC meeting, some folks came to talk to us from Union Local 25 of the union for folks who, service workers union, who work down at the National Harbor. They'd had some concerns about some changes to the NH1 bus route. In light of that, the RAC decided to hold a special meeting, which was Tuesday of this week, to discuss that bus route and also just get a better understanding of WMATA bus policy and bus operations. At that meeting, we were very happy to hear from one of the Local 25 representatives, Linda Martin, that there is support now from both Gaylord and from Gaylord to have the route changed back to the old route. Now, we understand from the input that we had from Jim Hamry and Mr. Tapp, who runs the Southeast Bus Garage, that, you know, there are legitimate issues with the time frame in which that bus route can be changed. And of course, it's still, while the union and Gaylord will support this change, we understand that, you know, the request does need to come from folks at the county level to have the route changed back, and we hope that will be supported. But what we were a bit concerned when we heard about some of just the day-to-day issues for folks who are trying to get to their jobs down at National Harbor, particularly on the weekends. There really isn't a good route for walking or biking to the National Harbor, which some folks now have to do. Unfortunately, other transportation connections aren't available for folks who are at a lower income level. The union folks did say that in addition to the problems that are being, the challenges faced by members of the union, there are non-unionized workers actually down at National Harbor who are also affected. And some of those folks are actually starting to quit their jobs and seek employment other places where the transportation access is better. And I think we all hope that for the sake of both the employees and some of the businesses down at National Harbor, in the time that it may take to get to a point where the bus service can really serve the workers as well as visitors to the National Harbor, some sort of interim solution can be developed to ensure that the issues, some of the safety issues folks have experienced walking along the roads leading to National Harbor, close contact with cars. In some cases, people have been stopped by individuals in cars and created situations where they didn't feel safe. So hopefully there can be some sort of interim solution developed, which I realize is not necessarily a WMATA responsibility, but it is something that I think would be important for the folks who are affected by that change. With regard to issues internal to WMATA, I was very pleased that my request to both Chairman Graham and Mr. Cato to develop some very basic advertising for the RAC to publicize the existence of our group and our meetings is moving forward. I think that having signs on buses and in rail stations so that folks just know that we're here. I think sometimes, you know, there was quite a bit of attention when our group was first formed 4 years ago, but I think having some continued publicity would be very important to hopefully making sure just folks know that we're here as a resource. And then I also wanted to just convey my appreciation to Mr. Cato for inviting myself, Patrick Sheehan, and Penny Everline, myself and the two vice chairs from Maryland and Virginia to come and meet with the executive leadership team. I think that we actually knew a number of those folks, but I think it was a really valuable experience just to sit down and talk a little bit about the RAC as well as hear some of their perspectives on rider input. And I'm also, and last but not least, I am very pleased to welcome two new members from Montgomery County to the RAC, Ron Whiting and Victoria Wilder, and it sounds like we will have a new friend from Virginia very soon. Okay, and that concludes my report, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much, Chairperson Zinkel, and I want to most definitely second your comments in regards to the RAC is going to be just as effective depending upon the energy that we put into it on all sides of this. And I think Mr. Cato's initiative is much appreciated. I appreciated the opportunity to meet with you in my office about these issues. Your participation in our DC panel the other evening was excellent. We know that the people who are in the RAC have busy lives, other commitments, and that necessarily means they can't all be here on our meeting dates for participation in the committees, but I certainly would like to see more of that in terms, and I would ask the committee chairs to please, as appropriate, involve the RAC in our committee discussions as well as our discussions here. I mean, we want this to be a vital contributing element of our authority, and we are committed to having that happen. So, but it's going to take some effort on everybody's part to incorporate the RAC into our deliberations to the maximum extent possible.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Graham, for your continued support of our group.
Thank you. Ms. Hewlett?
Thank you. Thank you so much for your comments, too. I echo many of your sentiments and value the RAC very much. I also would like to comment on the NH1 bus. I thank you for your feedback on what happened at the last meeting. And I did hear very recently that Gaylord and the local union did come to some agreement on reinstating the bus. And I know that, you know, you're looking for some interim solutions. There's still a lot of logistics, as you know, that have to be worked out. And perhaps we can talk with Gaylord as well. As you know, this was Gaylord's request for this change in the first place. So maybe we can work with them as well to see what part of the solution they can, what major part of the solution they can play.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that when folks do come to the RAC, one of the things that I emphasize with them is we're an advisory group, you know, not the decision makers. And so there's a boundary issue there, but there's also, I think, other boundaries in this situation. And I agree with you that while I think that WMATA can be part of the solution, I think there are other folks who have a role to play. And in the interim,
I'd be happy to talk with them.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think that they would be, you know, they would be interested to talk to you. And I did actually suggest
in talking with them.
That they reach out to you directly. Okay. So okay. Hopefully you're on their list.
Thank you.
Mr. Linton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to reference to
Mr. Linton, the mic. Yes, ma'am. I just wanted to ask Mr. Cato a question regarding a comment that was made. Do we have the ability to allow developers or others to subsidize or underwrite costs of routes, particularly new routes to new areas?
I think we have the ability to accept support for anyone so long as they're not doing other business with the agency, but I'm going to ask legal counsel to really comment on that. My first thoughts are they can sponsor routes. and business organizations could do so, but again, I'm asking legal counsel that.
Excuse me, I don't think we've actually had that occur before, but I don't think there's any real legal impediment to doing so as long as it's structured appropriately so we're not at risk for loss of revenue in the event that the developer decides to stop. But that's really a matter of structuring the agreement rather than an impediment to it.
But it's not something that we have done.
I do not believe we've done that before now.
Interesting, Mr. Benjamin.
Yeah, we have done it. We call it contract service. It's just that we enter into a contract with whoever wants it to provide the service so long as they pay for it. And they then get the revenues. We've done that for years.
So we've done it with developers and new service areas?
We've done it with anybody who wants to enter into a contract with us, be it private or public.
Well, I mean, the reason I was asking, because as a rule at SEPTA, we've had a fairly aggressive approach in that way, and we've often had developers, new developments, where there were not existing routes, where they would subsidize the operating cost of that new route until such time that service levels reached one in which we had a kind of ratio, recovery ratio, where you would have to support new service. And we used to do that pretty routinely. And I was just wondering, in light of the fact that sometimes we have developments that occur, and getting those employees and new customers and others is also very attractive to the developer, whether or not that was something we did in terms of practice.
I think there's a distinction there that's very important, and that is on contract service. It is not a metro route that we are running and somebody else is subsidizing to make up the difference. It's a route where we are somebody else is paying us in order to provide a service, and therefore it doesn't fall under our normal rules of what constitutes a metro route or not a metro route. So it would be different from what you just described.
Thank you very much, Chairperson Zinkel.
You have a puzzled look on your face.
Only from the perspective of, you know, any services that are subsidized, I just want to add to that by a private business must be open to the general public. I just want to make that clarification.
Sure, sure.
Can that be charter services?
Sure. It was not in SEPTA's practices, it was not a charter service that was exclusive for the employees, but it was additional service that their employees would have access to like anyone else, and therefore they were willing to support it.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Zimmerman?
I mean, maybe there's a distinction here, but we certainly have examples of cases where particularly, you know, a private developer, for instance, is, you know, subsidizing part of a route that's going to serve that, which then, of course, is open to the public. We have examples in my county where in part of the arrangement in approving their project was that they would have such service and they would pay it. And, you know, so they're supporting part of the route. I mean, there are a lot of examples of that. So I mean, it seems to me that that's not at all unusual, this sort of thing. Again, unless I'm missing something, I think this is something we've been doing for some time.
And we've also, of course, opened early and stayed open late, you know, to accommodate private interests who are paid for it. But I don't know in the District of Columbia whether we've actually had a route as such that operates on a scheduled routine basis that is paid for by a private company. But let's we're diverting from our agenda. Maybe you could, Mr. Cato, if you could do some research on this and provide us with a summary of that. Let's move on our agenda to the report by the chairman. I want to take advantage of this opportunity to discuss the first public forum that was held on our FY11 budget, which was held in the District of Columbia on October the 19th. The format we used began with a presentation by our general manager, followed by a panel discussion. And I'm very pleased that the panelists, we had board member Michael Brown was there. We had the D.C. Department of Transportation. We had Mr. Simpson from ATU. We had the Riders Advisory Council. Chairperson Zinkel was there. We had the Accessibility Advisory Council was represented in terms of metro access issues. We had Greater Washington, D.C., which is a blog in a very effective transportation commentary. And we had the executive director of the downtown BID, a business improvement district. So the panel provided us with a very good discussion of ideas on how to raise revenue, how to operate service more efficiently, and ideas about new fare structures, peak versus non-peak fares, and so forth. So I think the panel discussion worked very, very well. Mr. Cato's presentation worked very well. And we also had some very vigorous discussion from the participants, and this was well covered, I thought, by the Washington Post. We had a couple of very disgruntled riders who came and presented their point of view on some of the service issues, which reminded all of us of the reasons we need more creative solutions to these problems. And so we were pleased to have this early discussion of the FY11 budget, even though a good part of the discussion, not surprisingly, moved away from the FY11 budget into current service issues, which I don't know what happened in Virginia or what's going to happen in Maryland, but that was the experience that we had. I think this idea, which was originally proposed by Mr. Linton, is a very good idea, but we really should refine this, and I'm going to ask Mr. Cato to provide the board with an appraisal and an evaluation of this technique, because I just don't want this to be done and then we move on to other things. I'd like to have an appraisal by staff of how this worked in the three jurisdictions and how we might look at this for the future so that we can have that analysis from you, Mr. Cato. Are you willing to provide that to us?
Absolutely.
Okay. Because, of course, staff will have witnessed, have been engaged in all three of the public forum. But I think it was positive in the District of Columbia. We certainly appreciated the media attention that we received, because there was also broadcast media was there, as well as the Washington Post and others. So we had a good experience. Now, the other matter I wish to handle under my report is the new RAC appointment from Virginia. Mr. Zimmerman, do you have that information?
Yes, and there's a resolution that's been, the standard appointment resolution that's been distributed, the key words of which would say that the board appoints Lorraine Silva to the Writers Advisory Council representing the state of Virginia to fill a term which is set to expire in December 2010. And if it's an order, Mr. Chairman, I move approval of the resolution.
And who is the person, please?
Her name is Lorraine Silva.
Okay. It's been moved. Is there a second? It's been moved by Mr. Zimmerman and seconded by Mrs. Hutchins. Is there discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The ayes have it, and that resolution is adopted. Thank you. We will now proceed to the report by the General Manager.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As a result of your report, my report is going to be much shorter. I have two items to talk about. One is the public forums that we had both in the District of Columbia and the other sponsored by the Northern Virginia Transportation Commission last night in Fairfax. Both were successful, yet they were different. The first session on Monday, as you mentioned, we had 10 speakers who gave us input on service issues as well as funding. Last night, we had elected officials from Northern Virginia who sat on the panel, members of the Riders Advisory Committee, and others who gave input into the presentation as well as the discussion, and numerous speakers who focus on issues concerning the funding and recommendations on funding, as well as basically, I think, almost a unanimous support for funding some increase in revenues versus eliminating services. Last night, we had the second vice chair, Kathy Hutchins, was there, as well as board member Chris Zimmerman, and also Jeff McKay, as I said, many other elected officials. And so I look forward to the meeting in Maryland, and I have to agree that this process has given us a way to give additional public input and also the opportunity for us to explain to the public what our financial condition is at this time and what it looks like in the future. The second item is, again, as of last Friday, as I'm sure you all know, we have expanded cell services in 20 of Metro's busiest underground stations. Metro Rail riders are able to use the four major cell providers, AT&T, Sprint, T-Mobile, and Verizon, to make call from the 20 station platforms. This wireless contract is expected to generate approximately $25 million for Metro during the initial 15-year period, an additional $27 million during the 5 two-year renewal terms. Again, the work was done, and the four providers provided the hardware and the installation at no cost to Metro. But the next step is to provide services to the remaining underground platforms, and as well as to extend services within the tunnel. And the project is scheduled for completion by October of 2012. Mr. Chair, as we commonly do, we like to recognize outstanding performers. And today, Mr. Francis will make a presentation on one of our employees who routinely performs outstanding, but there is also special circumstances for this recognition. And Chairman Graham, if you would join me in the center of the room to make the presentation to this employee.
Thank you, Ms. Cato. If I can also have Mr. William Perkins. William, if you can join Mr. Cato and Mr. Graham. As you know, it takes many people working together to make Metro run. Every day, so many of our customers see our bus operators, rail operators, and station managers doing their part. So for the month, this month, Employee Spotlight, we wanted to highlight an employee whose job is important, but who works behind the scenes. This month, we selected William Perkins, a station supply runner for the West Falls Church Rail Yard. As a supply runner, Mr. Perkins ensures that supplies, schedules, fair media, special event brochures, and signage are available at 12 Metro Rail stations on the Blue Orange Line from McPherson Square to Vienna. His consistent and exceptional performance has been noticed and admired by his supervisors and his peers. He is considered among the best at his job, and his work coordinating signage and supplies for all the first aid stations during our service to the presidential inauguration in January was notable. So today we wanted to recognize the work of William Perkins and all of our Metro supply runners in this month's Employee Spotlight.
Mr. Chairman, that concludes my report.
Thank you very much. Mr. Cato, I was very pleased to attend the press conference that we held on the addition of wireless services to the 20 underground platforms. And I just want to commend you, as I did then, and your staff, all the people who were involved in making this happen so quickly. Because this was a requirement that was added by the Congress of the United States as part of our capital funding legislation, and it had a deadline. And that deadline was actually, we did this work before the deadline, and we did, I think, a year's worth of work in 5 months. Do I remember that correctly?
Yes.
I mean, it was an absolutely exceptional piece of exceptional response to a deadline, which we welcomed, and we were going to do this work anyway, but it was done, And I just think that everyone involved in this deserves a round of applause and appreciation. Is there further questions or discussion? Mr. Zimmerman?
Mr. Chairman, I just did want to say a word about last night's event and thank Mr. Cato and the staff for the work done to put on the budget forum that was conducted last night in Northern Virginia. I think it was a very successful and effective effort. We had 17 speakers, and we had a pretty good participation, not only of the three Virginians who are here today, but of our colleagues from around Northern Virginia, both local governments and state legislators. I think we must have had about 15 or so, all of whom serve on the Northern Virginia Transportation Commission, which is the vehicle through which Virginia participates in Metro. So we had people who serve in every local government, I believe every single one of them in the compact on the Virginia side was included, and legislators as well. And that enabled us to have a pretty good discussion, both in terms of people being able to hear, you know, our colleagues who don't serve at Metro got to hear the general manager and ask him questions. They also got to hear the public's concerns specifically about Metro in a way they might or might not have as much opportunity to hear normally, and they got to hear the response from the general manager to that. And that interaction and dynamic, I think, was very effective and is the kind of thing we need to do more of to get a good understanding all the way around among all the stakeholders with the very difficult decisions that we're facing this year. So, again, thanks to our board secretary, the general manager, and all the staff for the work that's done, as well as the Northern Virginia Transportation Commission staff who worked on putting it together. And like you, I hope it's something we'll be able to learn from and perhaps use as a model for further discussions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zimmerman. Further questions or discussion? Very good. Then we'll proceed to our move on our agenda, which the next item is the report by the Planning, Development, and Real Estate Committee. Mr. Albert.
Thank you, Mr. Graham. The Planning, Development, and Real Estate Committee has one item today. Metro received an unsolicited proposal for a replacement facility for the Southern Avenue Metro Bus Garage. The committee has instructed the staff to issue a request for proposal for a replacement facility that will be a minimum LEED Silver rating that will accommodate a minimum of 250 buses. There is no linkage from this RFP to the unsolicited proposal received, so I move approval for staff to issue the RFP for a replacement facility for the Southern Avenue Metro Bus Garage. Staff will return to the board with a summary of responses and recommendations at a later date. So
it's been moved by Mr. Albert. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Zimmerman. Discussion. Hearing none. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, no. The ayes have it. And that proposal, that action item is approved. Further, Mr. Albert?
There are no further items.
Then we now proceed to the report by the Finance, Administration, and Oversight Committee. Mr. Benjamin.
Thank you, Mr. Graham. We had one action item that's associated with the external audit. The external auditors presented the results of their audit to us. The most significant factor there is that they gave us an unqualified opinion, which is exactly what you're looking for. It's what you want to get. We do have a resolution in front of us that accepts the report of the auditors. I would just note that there's one error in that report or in that resolution, and that is this states that there are three items that we are accepting. In fact, there are only two. The comprehensive, we've got the report on internal controls and on compliance. The comprehensive annual financial report, in fact, is not done by the auditors and was not presented to us, nor do we normally accept it. So I ask that we just take that off that resolution. And with that eliminated, I move this item.
It's been moved by Mr. Benjamin. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been seconded by Mr. Albert. Discussion. Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. And that action item is approved. Mr. Benjamin.
That concludes my report.
Thank you very much. We now proceed to the administrative items. There are published 10 items, but as I had mentioned from our executive session, we're adding administrative item number 11, which is the tax advantage lease rail car substitution. Is there objection to considering all of these 11 items in block? Hearing none, then I move all 11 items. Is there objection?
No objection. I have a question on the items.
Okay. I move all 11 items. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mrs. Hutchins. Is there discussion on the motion? Mr. Linton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a one question about the contract to approve and initiate an award for debit or credit card software. And I clearly understand the need of continuing to have that software capability for our current usage and also the fact that we're going to have auto load in our expanded smart card applications. But it also referenced open payment systems in the future, and I was wondering, as we are sending out this RFP and the software to be designed, how we are assuring that the software will be something that will be accessible to any potential vendors that we may choose to select down the line related to the open payment, and that we don't have to go back out and get additional software again, depending upon what kind of decisions we make with that. And that probably has a lot to do with how the software is designed, what the licensing elements are, and want to make sure that we have considered all those as we go forth with initiating this contract.
Mr. Linton, actually the specification for this specific solicitation considers all of those components. And is, makes it open enough so that it's able to be integrated in recognition that we do have a solicitation out there for the open payment card. So.
Okay, I just want to make sure we're not going to be paying twice.
Further discussion on the motion? Further discussion? Mr. Zimmerman?
Sure. Just briefly on item number five, Mr. Cato, this is the one that is a contract with West Virginia University Research Corporation. For the purpose of bus emissions testing?
Yes.
How would you characterize what we're hoping to get as a result of this contract?
What we will get will be emission levels from the various types of vehicles, diesel, CNG, as well as hybrids, as well as it would tell us, based upon life cycles, the mileage per unit of fuel from the various types of vehicles. This is something we've discussed before. You know, we keep different numbers and factors on how our buses are performing. It will provide the industry with that information for their decisions in the future, or more quantitative numbers, to make decisions on what type of fuel or technology to use for future buses.
So, but this is going to be performed on buses that are currently in service for us?
Yes.
So it's not looking at anything that we don't have now but might be considering?
That is true.
Okay. For instance, we had somebody at Public Comp talking about a product that's on the market now that's a hybrid electric using CNG, one combination we don't currently have in our fleet.
No, this will be a test on the hybrid electric using diesel.
And the CNG we have?
The CNG as well as the clean diesels that we have.
But we obviously might be interested in other products in the future, so.
Yes, but this grant and the monies that were established for this particular test will deal with the existing technology. Again, provides information for us. It provides information to Cummins and other manufacturers of engines and power systems to utilize and basically and fine-tuning their product as well as letting the industry know what the outcomes have
and
been.
It's an outside grant.
So it's an outside grant.
Point. So, I mean, so to provide some useful information about the equipment we now have, both for us and for the industry.
Yes.
At their expense.
Yes.
But would you say that, would you agree with the statement that it would settle once and for all which types of, which of our bus types run cleaner or more cost-effective? Would that be overstating once and for all?
I would not make that statement.
I would either, Mr. Cato. That was my reaction as well, and I just thought it would be useful for us to clarify to anyone who had gotten the impression that this was intended or expected to once and for all settle anything about fuel types. Thank you.
Further discussion? Further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor of the motion, which is to improve administrative item 1 through 11, administrative items 1 through 11, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Say opposed, no. This motion is approved, and the 11 items are approved. We now proceed to reports. The District of Columbia, Mr. Albert.
No reports.
State of Maryland, Mr. Benjamin.
No, actually, it's Mr. Will.
It's Mr. Solomon, but he's not
here. Not here.
I would say Mr. Linton.
Mr. Linton, do you have a report from Maryland?
No report, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Virginia, Commonwealth of Virginia, Mrs. Hudson? No report. So now we will retire back into executive session, from which we have not concluded our session. And in the event that there are action items that arise from the executive session, we will return to this board meeting. And so this meeting now stands in recess.